I like to use this example all the time because it's so much fun. guess who hit 47 home runs in the KBO last year? Eric Thames. Eric Thames went 40-40 in the KBO last year. This is becoming like my favorite thing ever. Episode 71 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella and George Bissell. How are you guys doing on this Monday winter meeting eve?
Good. I don't know if I should be like jealous of the people in Nashville or relieved that we're not there. It sounds like a circus in all the good ways and the bad ways. How you doing, George?
I'm good. I'm exhausted just following Twitter today, and there's so many deals going down, signings, trades. It feels like I've spent the whole day writing transaction analysis, so it's been fun, to say the least.
Yeah, there's no shortage of stuff going on, and we will talk about a lot of it. There's been even more things that have popped up since we even wrote this agenda, so we will cover as much as we can get into. So let's get the formalities out of the way. You can read us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George is at George Bissell. That's two S's and two L's. If you listen to us on iTunes, we ask that you rate and review us. And if you want to email us with a topic or a question, it's flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Now let's take a quick break and then we'll jump right into it. And welcome back. So before we get started with the current events of the day, there are a few things that we've been asked on Twitter, which George has been keeping an eye out for us. So George, I'm going to hand this over to you, and you can throw a couple of these questions out there that you find interesting.
Yeah, really appreciate all the response we got on Twitter. We sent out a request for some questions, and you guys were awesome getting some responses to us. You can also email us a longer question if you have it, if it's over 140 characters. So we got a few good ones, but we're only going to do the best of them. And I'm going to start off with this question from at @RotoLando. Yes, the @RotoLando. I'm going to give it to Mike. Better shortstop option for next year, Jung Ho Kang or Trey Turner?
Well, you know, I think that to me that question depends on what you're looking for. I in terms of a more solid, reliable option, I think Kang is a guy you want to go with. He should be healthy by opening day. I don't think there should be any complications from his injury. I believe in him. I believe in what he did last year is repeatable. That being said, I don't see that much more upside in what he can do. Turner is someone, you know, assuming that the Nationals go with him, and at this point I think that's going to be the play. Turner could definitely be the player to, you know, outproduce his value. But, you know, that being said, you know, we've kind of seen this with rookies, and, you know, last year as good as many rookies were, you just have to be careful, you know, remember that they don't all, you know, come out of the chute like that. So I think Turner could be better. Kang to me is the safer option, you know, particularly if you're in an auction at that point of the auction or draft where you're looking for stats. Turner's the guy, you know, particularly in a keeper where if you need to take some risks. Now in a keeper, he's going to be taking a lot of formats, but if for some reason he's out there and you need to take some risks, I'd go with Turner.
Brett, you ranked Turner number 25 on your midseason update. last year. Are you still that high on him? Do you think his stock's maybe gone up? And specifically more for redraft leagues than anything, what are we looking at for 2016? If you had to guess right now, what his season looks like next year?
Yeah, I am both high on him in the long term and cautious on him in the short term. You know, the reason for the latter are a lot of stuff that Mike already said. I mean, he has a little bit of a value floor with his speed, just because I think even if he plays shortstop for half the season and isn't very good, I think there's still a good likelihood that he could get to at least 15-20 steals. And you know, there's certainly plenty of flame out risk there, but it's a safer floor. You know, I think, especially if you're in an only league, I think he's about as safe of a bet for a non Corey Seager rookie to earn $10. I think he'll probably be a bit more expensive than that if he indeed has the starting job coming into the season. But as far as the question goes, I would take Gong over Turner, and you know, at least for right now, I'll put the injury thing out there. If it looks like Gong is going to miss the first month or so of the season, which there have been rumors both ways, then I might end up leaning Turner. But Gong was hitting really, really well before he got hurt. His second half was pretty ridiculous. In 54 games in the second half, he hit .310, .364, .548. With 11 homers, and he was really starting to adjust to major league pitching, and obviously, you know, major league pitching was and is going to adjust back to him, and maybe the injury came to a good time for him before that adjustment came. But you know, I think he's a pretty safe. I think he's a pretty safe mid-level middle infielder with a little bit of upside on top of it, and certainly a higher floor than Turner.
Yeah, I really like Gong too, and also he's got a bit of versatility. He's a shortstop and third base eligible, so that power at a middle infield spot is huge. All right, we got two questions on Carlos Correa and Francisco Lindor, both in the same question, so we definitely need to cover those two guys, and we're going to get to that later with our American League valuation segment. So I'll go to you, Mike, first. Should we be concerned about a potential sophomore slump from Correa or Lindor, and is a second round value right for both of those guys? That's from @DanStrafford. Mike, what says you?
Yeah, first of all, hi Dan, who, you know, you're friend of the show. You're on Sirius. Thanks for the question, and definitely enjoy your show. I think, first of all, just to say, I don't think Lindor is a second round play. That's a stretch for me, and I like Lindor. I think he's a really solid player, but he's somebody, you know, just kind of spitballing it right now early on. I'm thinking ninth round off the top of my head, maybe 10th round, and that would be in a 15 team league. I'm a little skeptical as far as the slump with him. You know, great, solid player, you know, great baseball player. The power is something I think is going to slip a little bit. If you look at some of the batted ball data, it doesn't necessarily support the power. And it's something about Lindor we thought kind of coming into the year that his defense was there, his offense wouldn't quite catch up. I think his offense was better than advertised, and the talent's there for him to produce. I just think you see some slippage with the power. Correa, if there's a slump, you know, I know, George, I think you wrote about him at some point during the year. Am I correct?
Yeah, late in the season, looking at where his value is trending going into next year.
Right, and what you had pointed out was that if you prorated his earnings from the year, he could be close to a $40 player. Where I see the slump with Correa is, you know, I think it's just hard to keep doing that over the course of a full season. But that being said, I could see him being a $30 to $32 player, and that's probably where my bid in an AL only would sit. So as far as a slump, I don't necessarily see a slump for Correa because he's a great player, but a correction. He's definitely a second-round player, and in a 15-team league, if you take him late in the first, I don't necessarily think that's a bad play. it's just really hard. I know he's young, but it's just really hard to see him slipping that much. He kind of reminds me of a poor man's version of Mike Trout when he first came up. You know, people were looking at Trout and looking for reasons for, and I'm not comparing the two, but, you know, they're looking for reasons for Trout to slip and saying, oh, you know, Trout's going to be like, there was one analyst who said that Trout would be the seventh best outfielder in his second full season or something like that. And, you know, I look at Correa and I'm like, well, you know, the floor for him from a bid standpoint or an earnings standpoint is probably like 23 to 25 if everything goes wrong. But I think you got to bid at least 30 on him. And in terms of a draft, early second round to me is the worst case for him. So Correa, definitely second round. Lindor, no.
Brett, are we running the risk here with Francisco Lindor is just tremendously overvalued in 2016 in redraft leagues?
I think we're there, and I think it might only get worse. And that is to take nothing away from Lindor, who is a really, really good player. Not, you know, I want to say prospect because I'm so used to saying prospect, but no, he's a really good baseball player. And I don't see the power continuing like this. I don't see him as more than a, you know, at most 10 to 12 home run type guy. You know, where I am going to peg him, if I'm bullish on Francisco Lindor, then I think he's essentially John Segura with less steals. Now that depends what you think of Segura. That's more of a, you know, when he was a hot commodity. But, you know, when Segura was a hot commodity, he was not a second round pick. He was, you know, I want to say like a sixth or a seventh round pick. And, you know, I understand reaching on Lindor in like the seventh or eighth round, but where he's going now, it just seems bonkers to me. It's certainly not going to be me taking him there. I don't think anything that drastic in his offensive profile has changed. I think he has a reasonably good chance to be a top 10 shortstop this year, but I would not be betting on him being top five.
Yeah. Once again, thanks to everybody who sent in questions. You can send them to us on Twitter at any of us, or use our hashtag we're going with here, FFF, Flags Fly Forever. You can also email us if you got a question as well. So
just a quick reminder, we did get a dynasty type question. Those questions are definitely better for Tino, which is our sister podcast, which Brett is also on, along with Ben Carson and Greg Goldstein. I listen to it whenever I can. It's a great podcast, but that's a better forum for dynasty questions than this one is.
Absolutely. So I'm going to throw it back over to Brett, and we'll dive into some current events.
All right. So now we get to do all of the fun talking about everything that has happened in the past couple of weeks, because it's been a while since we recorded a podcast. So we'll start with the really, really big arms, Price and Greinke. Let's start with the question, Mike. Who do you want in a mixed league next year, Price or Greinke?
I'd lean Greinke. I think that Price arguably has more talent or is a little bit better in real life. But in fantasy, and it's really close, you know, that you could kind of go either way. But in fantasy, the edges for me are that Greinke still gets to face the pitcher one or two times a game. Price doesn't. Price stays in the AL East, which is kind of tough. Greinke is losing a bit of a park advantage going to Arizona, although, you know, as we've talked about with Dodger Stadium, it's actually a pro home run park, even though it suppresses offense on the whole a little bit. And, you know, Greinke's still going to get to go to San Francisco and San Diego, and he's in a division that's not particularly brutal for offense. And, you know, he won't have to face the Diamondbacks, who really emerge as an offense on the whole. When you're talking about elite pitchers, to me, venue changes, unless you're talking about somebody going to Colorado or someone going to an extreme situation the other way, which was San Diego before last year, I don't really look at it that much as that much of a seismic change. In mixed leagues last year, I had Greinke at 38 and Price at 28. That's going to be closer just because the odds of Greinke putting up another, 166 are very slim. That's just tough to do. And his DRA wasn't quite there. The skills didn't quite match the ERA. But overall, I'm still going to take Greinke. But if you take Price over Greinke, I don't think either one's necessarily a bad call.
George, what about you?
Mike, you mentioned it, the ERA there. Greinke's strand rate last year was 92%, which I think is one of the highest strand rates for a qualified starter in, like, I don't know, at least the last 15 years. It was insane. So I'm banking on just a little bit of regression in the ERA department. I think if you look at the DRA, it's still right around 2. So
it's a little over 2.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's still going to be probably in the mid-2s, as a floor. I'm not concerned about him moving to Arizona. You're right. He's still facing, the same division, just a slightly worse home park. So, yeah, I wouldn't be concerned at all about Greinke. We talked about it on the last show, but he earned $40 in NL-only leagues this past season. I don't think he's got any shot of doing that again, but do I think maybe $30? I think I could see that. So the strikeouts certainly set a nice floor, and I'd still feel confident with him. And David Price, it's one thing to say he's pitched in the American League East, but he did it for two pretty small market teams. If in Tampa Bay and Toronto, they're not huge markets. He's struggled in the postseason, which is a big spotlight. I think just assuming he's going to be fantastic in Boston is a little bit of a stretch. I kind of want to see it. I'm not doubting that he can do it, but we just don't really know at this point how things are going to go in Boston. It's a different environment than pretty much anywhere else he's pitched. So I kind of want to see it a little bit with David Price, and I'm not as confident in him as I would be with Greinke.
I'm not buying that angle at all. I mean, Price has pitched in serious spots in the playoffs before, and he hasn't. We know what his record has looked like, but I'm a firm believer that you can't hold talent like that down that long in a spot like that, and it's only a matter of time before that stuff reverses. I mean, Price was absolutely dynamite down the stretch for Toronto as they were fighting for a playoff spot and eventually clinched a playoff spot. And I think that might have gotten more eyes on it if one, it had been a closer race, or two, if the three-headed monster in the National League weren't doing what they were doing. I think it's going to be close, but I take Price over Greinke for 2016. And I think part of that is because I do think the Red Sox defense is going to be quite a bit improved over the 2015 version. As the Red Sox fans listening to the podcast mutter "Thank God" under their breath. And
Collins is relieved if he's listening.
That's true. And I just don't, taking a further step back, even if Greinke was in LA, I think it would still be pretty close. And the move in park to Arizona, I think just slightly teeters it the other way. But that said, both of them are easy top 7-8 starters in fantasy leagues. I think they'd both be certainly top 7 for me. And I don't think either of them would be top 4. So we're looking at literally right in the 5-6-7 range. So it's more or less a coin flip. But if I'm tasked with deciding between the two in a draft, I'm gonna take Price. So I guess we'll. Do you guys want to say anything else about those two guys, or should we move to the next level?
It's really close. I mean, we disagree, but we kind of disagree in a way where it's like you're taking somebody that I shrug or I'm like, okay, I mean, they're both really good. It's a nice problem to have, put it that way.
Yep.
I feel like I've been listening to too much local sports talk radio because that was not my strongest take on David Price. really not
hot,
that good.
That was a hot take where the E is before the K.
Yeah, it wasn't that good. I definitely undersold Price a little bit. Maybe the numbers have been really good over the last few seasons. I think he's going to be fine in Boston.
The park of the division really more than I guess the will to win. You know, or not that you were saying that, but that those are the things that impact him, and the more I think than anything else. Where to me it makes it close and might even make me lean cranky.
Mm, yep.
Fair enough. So how far of a drop down from those two is Jordan Zimmermann, Mike?
I mean, it's quite a drop. And, you know, I think I did the transaction analysis for Zimmermann. Now, Zimmermann, you know, really fell off last year. And, you know, he was a $12 earner in – I'm having a little bit higher. No, I had him a little bit higher in NL only, but he was a $12 earner in mixed. He was the 56th best pitcher overall, and that includes relievers. He should bounce up from that, you know. But however, the thing with him, you know, his DRA has always been higher throughout most of his career. And the one thing about Zimmermann is that while, you know, he has the skills to kind of support a better ERA than his DRA, I think moving to the American League, you know, moving out of the NL East hurts anybody, and it's really going to hurt him. I think I saw somewhere he had the second or third easiest opponent schedule. He's not going to have that in Detroit. So while I see a bounce back coming, I think if you're going to pay him the way he was getting paid last year, where he's being drafted overall a shade outside of the top 50, not just for pitchers, but overall, I think you're going to have a bad time. I haven't put my rankings together, but I'm thinking more overall and not just pitchers, top 100, like around 100, maybe a little bit outside of there. There's just some arms I'd rather take ahead of him. He's going to go in a place that I'm not going to own him. And, you know, also hopefully he doesn't tweet any more things about the Packers and how much he likes them.
I'm with you on all of that except for one thing. I really wonder whether there's going to be a bit of a buying opportunity here, even with the realistic projections I think we have for him in Detroit. I mean, I know he has the name recognition, but I think this is widely agreed to be a very sizable move down, going from Washington to Detroit. And, you know, Zimmermann has been he had a down season in 2015 with some down velocity, and that's, you know, that's always a bad sign, and I think people are going to kind of just cross him off their draft boards a little bit. There is going to come a point where he is worth drafting, and it's likely in the, you know, it's likely in the mid SP3 range. And I think I wonder whether that value is going to be there in more drafts and auctions than we think. I'm really curious to see how that shakes out, because if he is going where Jordan Zimmermann goes, then no, I'm not going to own him. But if he's going where I think he might go, then there's a chance I might be wrong about that.
Brett, who would you rather have, Zimmermann or Nate Karns?
Zimmermann.
Okay. See, I don't think there's a huge gap. When Mike talked about it, but there's some pitchers with upside that you'd kind of rather take a shot on later. I feel like guys like Karns a little bit later on are guys I'd rather gravitate towards than.
But I agree.
Well, Brett, are they gonna? Are you talking about like Zimmermann in the 10th round or Karns in the like 17th round? Because that's a different question. If you're talking about both in the 10th round, give me Zimmermann every day.
Okay, yeah, I think if Karns is going to go later on, then yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at.
Yeah, but then it's a choice between different players, right? I mean, you're Zimmermann in the 7th round is likely a pretty hard no. Zimmermann in the 10th round or 9th or 10th round is it might be a pretty hard yes, depending on what else is going on in
I think Zimmerman, and I have to look, but Zimmerman that far down is, if not a bargain, at least he's a value play. Mm-hmm. And you know what I would say to your point about Zimmerman, Brett, is I do agree. I think there's some overstatement in how far he's fallen. But what I'm thinking, and this is a good example of where our relatively new tool DRA works well, I could see an improvement in his DRA and an improvement in the skill set while moving to Detroit and moving out of the NL East in particular erodes the ERA and the roto stats. And that's kind of where I look at where there's the balance with Zimmerman. And, you know, what's really tough is it is a question of will people look at more at the move, or will people look more at the contract and shiny new toy and some of the other, you know, improvements that Detroit has made and kind of look at it like, well, you know, this is a play I'm going to make thinking that Zimmerman's going to be revitalized. And that's something that's always tough. And I have to admit, I'm terrible at guessing. Like when Brett and I were writing some picks and pans for Peter Kreutzer, Rotoman's magazine, that'll, I think, be out next month will be out next month. And I'm really bad at trying to guess what's going to happen in drafts in 2 or 3 months until I actually start seeing some of the drafts come through. So you're right, Brett. It's possible that Zimmerman could be a bargain if that's the way the trend line goes.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think it's important. You know, this is one that we talk about this all the time. It's important to remember that there is, you know, there for every player, there is a place where he's a hard no, and there's a place where he's a hard yes. There's no, you know, you go in with your values, you go in with where you're comfortable taking these players, and you have to be able to pull the trigger on a player you might not be 100% confident in if the value is there. And it's something that you know, people do shy away from, and that's where you really make your money in fantasy leagues. Because, you know, if you're not super confident about a player, then odds are, you know, there are a lot of people that aren't super confident about a player, and if a lot of people aren't super confident about a player, then they're probably going to fall. And identifying where that value is just really, really key. So let's go to the next big dollar guy on the list, and that's Jeff Samardzija of the Giants. I think we'd all be in agreement that his value goes up because of the move to San Francisco. But just how much does it go up? How much? Well, let's keep asking the question on the way down. How much further down is Samardzija on your 2016 draft list than Jordan Zimmerman is, Mike?
He's a couple more rounds down. But what, you know, what's really funny about him is I did a mock yesterday, and Samardzija went higher than I thought he would. And the funny thing about Samardzija is that, as much as he had the one good year in 2014, otherwise he hasn't been that good. I'd probably put him two or three rounds in a 15-team draft behind Zimmerman. And, you know, maybe four or five if you don't like him. But the thing that Samardzija offers, and I think he'll continue to offer, is volume. He's pitched well over 200 innings the last 3 years. You know you're going to get about 200 strikeouts from him, or maybe a little bit less. The rate stats obviously are nothing to have him paying the right home about, with the exception of 2014. But, you know, I know there were some reports that, you know, he didn't really mesh with Don Cooper. You know, some of the data that I think it was Ryan Watt put out there on our site, you know, kind of talked about how, you know, it was a good piece, you know, how Cooper had him working in parts of the zone that Shark wasn't comfortable with. And that's something Dave Righetti might change. But whether he does or not, you know, as you pointed out, Brett, moving from the sell, you know, to San Francisco is one of the best park moves, even putting aside the league difference. And while I've never been a Shark fan, you know, this goes back to what we're talking about with perception. I think the perception on him has gone way too far the other way. I think Shark could easily, you know, put up a real life ERA, you know, around 3.5, 3.6 next year, which doesn't sound great. But again, in this context, but again, when you're talking about the volume of everything else that he puts up, I think there's going to be some sneaky value here. He's not even somebody I'm necessarily targeting because I've never been a big fan, but it could be one of those weird situations where, you know, all of a sudden I'm in on him just because other people are looking at what he did from a raw standpoint last year and saying they want to stay away. And I think there's also the perception the other way. It's people look at Zimmerman's contract and go, good deal. They look at Shark's contract and go, it's too much money. Sometimes it has an effect in real life, and it doesn't always, but I've seen it happen.
Yeah. George, what's your take?
Well, this kind of ties into our AL-only valuations we're going to get to later, but aside from Alex Cobb, who ended up missing the entire year, there wasn't a more prominent pitching bust in the AL than Samardzija last year. I think he lost something like $15, something crazy like that. His velocity was down, the strikeout rate, the ground ball rate all declined. There wasn't a whole lot that went right for him this past season, but I think he was a bit unlucky. You look at the ERA, it was closer to 5 by DRA, which we've touched on a few times tonight already. Only 3 pitchers had a larger differential between their DRA and their ERA than Samardzija. It was like more than half a run. So I think if Dave Rigetti can make some of the changes that Ryan pointed out in the transaction analysis, I think there is a case to be made for a rebound here. He's certainly going to a much better home park, and obviously getting to face weaker National League lineups is a huge benefit. So once again, it's an opportunity cost thing. If there's a discount in the middle of the draft, if he's slipping, and there's a buying opportunity there, absolutely, I buy the case for a rebound for Samardzija. It's going to depend, like Mike talked about, on the perception of your league mates and the people you're drafting with, more than anything, whether or not you actually end up with them, I think.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm still skeptical of the Samardzija proposition. I probably maybe 5 rounds or so after Zimmerman feels about right to me. I just don't I don't like that much unpredictability without what I would consider to be high-end upside. I don't think, even if the good Samardzija shows up, I don't think we're looking at a top 20 pitcher at this point. So given the risk and what his downside is, I don't think I'll be investing too much in him. Two other guys as we work down the list. Where does Samardzija rank compared to John Lackey, the new Cubs third starter, and Sashi Iwakuma, the new Dodgers second starter, Mike?
Well, you know, this is funny because in this mock draft that I did, I believe Samardzija went higher than both of those guys. And, you know, Lackey's somebody who just doesn't get the respect. You know, he's kind of boring. I think Lackey's going to have the better year. And Iwakuma should too. I'm not convinced that either one of them, and Lackey in particular, Lackey might go kind of close to where Samardzija goes, because he's not going to be regarded very well because of his age. He's moving away from St. Louis. You know, I know one of the reasons, you know, George mentioned the DRA ERA differential. Mm. 3 of the top 5 qualifiers were Cardinals, and some of that does tie into defense and St. Louis and positioning and all that. And while the Cubs certainly do, you know, position players, use the shift, whatnot, they also do use some interesting defenses, to say the least, and some intriguing alignments within games. So I think that could hurt Lackey a little bit. But I don't see any reason. You know, Lackey's kind of he's the mid-tier SP3 who's boring and doesn't have a lot of upside. But you look at him, and while I don't think he's going to put up a sub-3 ERA again, something in the low 3s really wouldn't surprise me, just because he always does perform. And he's in a situation that's a pretty good situation for him. You know, Iwakuma is someone who performs, is moving from the AL to the NL. It's always about the durability with him and how many innings he's going to put up. I probably would have Lackey ahead of Samardzija. I know some people are going to disagree with that. I think I'd have Iwakuma ahead of him too. Where I have them right now, I'm kind of gray on, but I'd have both of them behind Zimmerman, and probably a couple of rounds behind him with Iwakuma a little bit closer, but you're just talking about 2016.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'd go Iwakuma, Lackey, and then Samardzija for 2016.
That's what I'm looking at too.
I think Iwakuma is much safer than Samardzija, even with his injury risk replacing Samardzija's performance risk, and I think their upsides are similar.
Iwakuma's excellent. I mean, I think they're all in that 40 to 50 range. If I had to draft today, I think that's probably where they'd slot in. And you're right, I'd want Iwakuma. Even if you told me I'm only going to get 150 innings, I'd still rather have those than Samardzija.
This is the thing that, like, Chris Liss of RotoWire pointed this out to me a couple years ago, and it's a great point. It's especially a great point with pitchers. In a 12-team mix, in a standard mix, and that's not really our audience so much, Iwakuma's value creeps up because the replacement level player, the guy that's going to be out in the free agent pool that you can snag, 50 to 70 innings out of, to replace Iwakuma is going to be high. As an AL only or a deeper mix, you got to drop him a little bit. And that's where Lackey and Iwakuma to me are closer, just because Lackey is more likely to put up a full season or close to a full season. But in a 12 team mix, I definitely want Iwakuma. And that's even somewhere where if I'm looking at Iwakuma and Zimmerman, I'd still take Zimmerman, but they're a lot closer to me.
Yeah, this is the old Tulo argument. How, Tulo in a 10 or 12 team mixed league when he was at his peak was
Cargo. Yeah,
same idea. That those more injury prone, performance heavy guys get more valuable to the smaller your player pool.
Adam Jones versus Cargo, and it was like, in a deep league, deep mix, you want Adam Jones. In a shallow mix, you want Cargo, because you're going to get the replacement at bats.
Mm-hmm. So beyond those guys, do any of the other pitchers that signed over the past couple weeks register anywhere near these guys? I'm talking about names like Jay Happ, Marco Estrada, Rich Hill. I think that is all of them. I'm not missing a starting pitcher move, am I? I don't think so.
I don't think so. There were a lot of middle relievers that signed for a ton of money, but we don't need to talk about the general relief proposition for the most part, or about Ryan Madsen, I hope.
That's true. I'll include, I'll throw in Wade Miley there too, just because his value, I think, looks quite a bit different now. I know, George, I know you're like sitting on your hands waiting to talk about J Happ. So,
Oh my God, it's killing me.
Talk about Happ.
I'll let you go. You have 30 seconds. Go.
Okay. 11 starts with the Pirates. He was outstanding. He's going to Toronto. I know everyone's concerned about the park, and is he going to be able to keep the adjustments Searidge and the Pirates made with him? It's all about throwing more fastballs. That's the biggest thing he did in Pittsburgh. I think you're going to see that continue. I'm not that concerned about Happ overall. I think he's a top 50 starter, and I don't think people are going to want to pay that kind of price on draft day, so he's going to be an awesome value.
And I agree with you on Happ. He's going to slip because of the park and because of the division and the league, but I even if you look at what he did in Seattle, again, better park, but he wasn't awful in Seattle, and I think, obviously I could do what he did in Pittsburgh in terms of performance, but I agree with you, George. I think people are really discounting him too much.
I will own Happ pretty much every league next year. I'm pretty confident in that.
I want to quickly ask about, you mentioned Miley, and I just want to mention this quickly. So I saw a lot of people on social media today comparing Miley and the pitcher went to Boston, Elias, whose name I might be mispronouncing there. But a lot of people were saying the two of them are comparable. Is it me or I don't feel like that's quite accurate. Like, I feel like Miley is definitively better.
It is absolute. In my opinion, it is absolute garbage.
Yeah,
Wade Miley is one of those pitchers that just gets no respect. And he's not a great pitcher, but he's pretty good. And him in Seattle, all the old adages remain true. If you are a left-handed starting pitcher in Seattle, buoy for you. That's just awesome. unless you're Jay Happ. And George, I'm going to call bullshit on that one, because Happ had an 82 ERA plus in Seattle when he wasn't good in Seattle.
Wasn't good.
He was not good in Seattle.
He threw 49% fastballs there? He wasn't doing what he did later on in the year. So I think once he made that adjustment, you saw a noticeable bump.
I should be clear. I don't think he's going to keep all of his performance gains in Pittsburgh. But I do think that he's a better pitcher than he exhibited in Seattle. I think overall that there's a survivability factor with him. You're still talking about a back-end deep mix guy to me, but he is playable in that format. It's Elias, by the way. I just looked it up. So it's not the Sports Bureau. It's Elias. So
I thought it was I thought it was Elias, like the guy from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies.
but I look at Elias and I kind of look at him and I'm like, you know, he's sort of, I wrote the comment for him for the BP annual, and I said he's better than people think. In the sense that he's not a quad A guy, I think he's a valid five. But beyond that, that's as far as I see him. You know, he had about a 4.5 FIP last year. I don't have the DRA in front of me, but he's just someone I look at that I'm kind of like, you know, he's okay. I mean, he's a back end guy. He's not more than that. And you're right, Brett. Like Miley's somebody I look at who, if everything breaks right, he's a three. He's really more of a four to me. But I just look at Miley as being better and definitively better. I just want to make sure I wasn't losing my mind today. I saw a lot of people making that comparison, and some people were saying Elias was better. I was like, that just doesn't ring correctly with me.
No, absolutely okay. Not.
I just want to make sure I wasn't losing my mind. Thank you.
You are not losing your mind. I am like you guys, George, you say you're going to own Jay Happ in a lot of leagues. I think I'm going to own Wade Miley in a lot of leagues. And I can pretty much guarantee you I will own Jay Happ in none. I am not going down with that ship. That is, I don't think this ends well. I know what he did in Pittsburgh. I saw it. I know it was real. But no, I'm absolutely not going down with that ship. I would rather own Rich Hill than Jay Happ.
Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
We will. Happ and Hill are kind of lumped in that same category for me, where I will take them within the last three rounds or so of almost any size format.
Yeah,
just because I don't want them. If it's a 15-team league, I don't want them before the reserve round.
I took Happ in the next to last round as my last pitcher in the mock that I did on Sunday, and I think that was appropriate. He was a back end guy, you know. He's kind of a flyer guy. You know, he's not somebody I wouldn't have taken him earlier than that, and that's what he is. And you know, to George's point, I think I just like him a little bit more than you do as far as sustaining some of what he picked up. But I do agree it's a wild card, and we don't know. I think I was talking with Chris Quick and Eno Saris about this on Twitter. There aren't really a lot of test cases with the Pirates to see what these guys have done after they've left. I mean, there's A.J. Burnett, who went to the Phillies for a year. There's Edinson Volquez, who went to the Royals. And as far as starters, that's it. We don't really have a lot of data points.
You know, Brett, you did make a really good point where Happ is going to be everyone who plays, who's, you know, advanced analytics, sabermetric minded. It's going to be their favorite sleeper. So you're right. There's the risk that you have to reach for him a little bit at the end. So I see where you're coming from. That makes a lot of sense.
All right. So that's enough of pitchers, right? We're not going to talk about any relievers.
I don't think we really need to talk about relievers, no.
No, and the hitters haven't really been all that interesting in free agency. So we'll hit on a couple of guys. Is there anyone who has changed their value at all that you think is interesting on the hitting side? I feel like the hitters have just been so boring.
Well, Zobrist hasn't signed yet.
None of these guys have signed yet.
Cespedes, no.
I'm not a fan of Trumbo, but I mean, he moves to a great situation in terms of the park, so his value goes up a little bit. And you know, the other guy I look at is Cameron Maben. I know it's always an injury thing with him, but he finally, you know, was healthy enough last year to be solid, and he's moving into a good situation, really out of a bad situation in Atlanta to a decent situation in Detroit. So the runs at the very least should go up. But yeah, I don't think either one of those guys, in a 15-team mix, should be high on your radar. You're still talking at best about mid-tier guys, and maybe Mabin's a little bit lower than that. So, yeah, so far we haven't really seen the impact guys on the hitting side, you know, signed.
Yeah, I'm not. I know the park thing is a positive for Trumbo. I severely worry about his move back to the AL. He's just not a very good hitter, and he's older than people think.
I love Trumbo, which anyone who listens to this podcast knows. And I'm just saying, you know, if you're a Trumbo believer, you're probably gonna be really excited about him. I'm not. But he is a guy I could see hitting even with the 240. I think he's going to hit. He is the guy I could see hitting, you know, 30 to 35 home runs in that park if he plays all year.
Yeah. Without looking at his page really quick, how old do you think Trumbo is going to be on opening day?
I want to say he's younger than I think, so 29.
30?
George? 30. The correct answer is 30. He will be 30 on opening day.
I was close, but yeah, he's a guy I'll bet a lot of people think is like 32 or 33, right?
No, I think people think he's younger because he's been...
He didn't come into the league until, what, 2011, 12?
He was 25.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just seems like somebody who has like old man skills, which is why I like...
Yeah, he definitely has the old man skills. I'll spend 15 seconds talking about Byung-ho Park just because if you want to know everything I think about Park, you can read my transaction analysis that I wrote when he signed at BP maybe 4 or 5 days ago. I am definitely not going to own him on any teams. I don't want any part of this. I don't think he can make enough contact to make this matter. I think there's going to be a huge transition period with him. His swing is not geared to make contact, and he doesn't have, he's got really good power, but he doesn't have like game changing power. I know everyone will kind of bat their eyes about, the 53 home runs he hit. In the KBO last year, and he hit 52 the year before then. But I like to use this example all the time because it's so much fun. Guess who hit 47 home runs in the KBO last year? George?
Willie Mopena?
No, Eric Thames.
I was going to say I just saw it and I forgot.
Eric Thames. Eric Thames went 40-40 in the KBO last year. This is becoming like my favorite thing ever. I'm not buying it. He swings and misses way too much in Korea to make an impact in MLB. You know, if you want to, I listed out a whole bunch of the KBO's best pitchers in my article as well. It's a who's who of who cares. It's a mess.
Brett, can we do a KBO fantasy league next year? I feel like that'd be a lot of fun.
Years ago I talked about doing a PCL fantasy league, and you know, if guys got promoted to the majors, you didn't get their stats in the majors, and you know, it never came to fruition, but I thought that would be interesting.
I would totally be down for that. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, the best thing about the KBO is that they changed the ball 2 years ago and offense has literally exploded. It's been hilarious. I'm looking for the stat line. The team that Byung-ho Park played for, as a team, they hit 296, 370, 484. As a team.
You know who's a big fan of the ball change? Eric Thames.
Yeah.
Yep.
Big fan. He's going to get posted. It's going to be great.
You get paid.
Uh-huh.
That's crazy.
Yeah. All right. So that was more than 15 seconds, but I'm done. So should we move on to AL valuations?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Cool.
Did you guys have a chance to look at them at all? I'm sure, Brett, you have your questions to tee this up with.
I did get a chance to look at them. I will let you, as we've done before, I will let you do a little bit of an introduction here, and then we'll talk about some of the interesting things in there.
Yeah. Well, you know, just in case there's people that don't listen every week, just to go through this a little bit more quickly. So these are the valuations I do every year for Baseball Prospectus. This is the third year I've done them. These are retrospective valuations based on what happened last year. These are not predictions. And it's a look back at NL only, AL only, and 15-team mixed leagues. We talked about NL only in the last podcast. We're going to talk about AL only this week. And as far as looking at trends and what happened, unlike in the National League, where there was some increase in value on the best players, the American League went in the other direction, where things flattened out a little bit. And for the first time in a few years, no hitter in the AL cracked the $40 barrier. The highest earning hitter was Jose Altuve, which ties into another trend. Stolen bases dropped a lot in the American League, and that's one of the reasons that Altuve earned the money that he did. Even with a down year compared to 2014, Altuve, with the 38 steals he had, were worth quite a bit. And on the pitching side, unlike in the NL, some of it was that the performances weren't quite as dominant. But the AL really had a lot of pitchers kind of on a par with each other, where they were all very good, but not quite the elite level of a Greinke or a Kershaw. So the highest earner was Dallas Keuchel at 35. And as far as a top-earning number, that hasn't happened in a couple of years where the number's been that low. So I don't know if some of these trends are going to carry forward or not. But if you were in an AL only, I did find it intriguing that it wasn't like the NL where a superstar, like I won Tout Wars with Paul Goldschmidt and Clayton Kershaw, both on my team. In the AL, it was a little bit harder to win an AL only league with just one player as a result.
Yeah, it's very different from the NL. It's you know, the players at the top in the it feels like the players at the top in the NL make sense. The players at the top in the AL make a little less sense.
Well, here's the thing in the AL. I have a feeling in the NL, if you ask somebody to tell you, so there were 10 guys that earned 30 or more in the NL. And if you ask somebody to rattle off the names, even a mixed league player, they probably would get most of the names correct. You know, they might miss out on one or two players, but you would know those guys were in the AL. And I see this just because people ask me questions on social media and via email at Baseball Prospectus. You know, a guy like Mike Trout, you would know he was on the list. You know, and a guy like Josh Donaldson, you would know was on the list. But some of these players, like Lorenzo Cain, earned $35. And a bigger surprise, you know, I often see these questions now of who should I draft first next year? Or would it be radical to draft Manny Machado over Donaldson? And I pointed out to somebody, I was like, you know, Machado earned $2 fewer than Donaldson did last year. So you could take Donaldson, but it's not radical to go the other way. And a lot of people, I think, don't really quite know, like you're saying, Brett, what these players earned or even what they did. You know, if you ask someone how many steals Machado had last year, I'm willing to guess that someone would guess 10 to 12. He stole 20 bases.
He did. And you know who called that? I don't know if I remember listening to this at the beginning of the season. It wasn't really a call. It was reporting. I was listening to Eric and Tristan's show, and they were talking to Stefania Bell. Okay. And Stefania was talking to Manny Machado in spring training.
Oh, I remember this.
He said, And this is, I talked to you about this at Tout Wars, because this was part of the reason why I took Machado in, which is funny because I was in the league with Stefanik.
Took him in Axe, right?
But yeah, I took him. He was one of my first picks in Axe. She talked to him, said his knees were feeling great, and he wanted to start running again. He felt like, you know, he felt like he could do it, and was going to do it. He said he wanted to steal at least 20 bases, I think was exactly what she said. And, it ended up being, prophetic. So
I would have guessed 10 to 12, even based on what Stefania said. I didn't think that was, I thought that was a little optimistic, and I wouldn't have guessed 20. So yeah, that was a really great call. And then the other guy here who, you know, I thought people were too high on, and you know, I'll give another shout out here because I was wrong on him. Mike Podhurst or Fangraphs took Mookie Betts early in labor, and I didn't think that Mookie Betts would be as good as he was. He earned 31 in AL only, was a 7 best player. So hats off, Mike, if you're listening. Good call.
Yeah.
Mookie Betts is good.
Betts is really good. So let's talk about the pitchers. I think is a little bit more fascinating in the AL, and I don't want to move us over there too early, but you know, the guys who I like looking at the top 10 salary pitchers, the top 10 salary chart in your article, and you know, it was really full of a lot of disappointment, but not from the people that you would have thought. if that makes sense. I mean, that Alex Cobb thing aside, I mean, that was just a bummer. And those numbers are kind of skewed because I think the labor draft was before he got hurt, right?
It was, although the funny thing, I don't know if you remember this, there was, Tout was probably the nadir of his value. And then right before the season, I included Peter Kreutzer's projection. There was some hope he could come back earlier, and his price actually ticked up a little bit. And it ticked up a little bit in my home league as a result. So Tout was at his lowest, but there was a point in early April people thought, oh, maybe he'll make it back. We'll only miss a couple months.
Yeah, that clearly did not happen. But yeah, it's, you know, the relievers versus the starters in the AL is amusing to look at. You got, you know, guys like I mean, Dylan Betances is on there, which I love, and he was incredible last year again. Cody Allen, I've always been a big fan of, but you know, Sonny Gray and David Price were the only ones of the top 10 pitchers that earned more than their preseason expert price. So where, Mike, where does that mean the value came from here?
Well, if you're talking about the overall pitchers, you know, Dallas Keuchel was the best pitcher. And the funny thing about Keuchel, he's one of those guys who I had him in the 3-star tier as the value pick, which means I thought he could be a second tier guy in mix. I certainly didn't think he would completely dominate the way that he did and just be so sick with the ground balls. So, you know, he was the big value pick among the top pitchers. You know, the other guys who produced were Chris Archer, who a lot of us thought similar to Keuchel, but you know, not quite the bargain. Average expert salary of 16, went for 24, 252 strikeouts, which I don't think anyone would have expected from Archer, even with the hyped up strikeouts that we've had. And then Carlos Carrasco. Carrasco's somebody who I thought the experts were being a little bit aggressive on, but it turns out they weren't even aggressive enough. Average salary to 18, went for 23. And even though the ERA at a 3.63 looks kind of pedestrian, with a WHIP close to one or a little bit higher than that, and again with a nice strikeout rate, Carrasco turned out to be a bargain.
He did. He was one of those guys who was both a popular sleeper and I think a little bit of a popular pan pick.
Yeah. You know what's funny, and I didn't really pan him. I just didn't quite think he was going to be the top, you know, of the line guy. You know, I'm looking at this list, and what's really funny looking at the – so there were 16 pitchers in the AL who earned 20 or more. And a lot of these guys, after you get past the top six, they weren't big volume guys. You've got Danny Salazar with 185 innings, and he was 12th overall. You've got Marco Estrada, who was 13th overall with 181 innings, and he actually was, you know, albeit at a buck or two, you know, purchased in all the expert leagues that I track. And you've got Masahiro Tanaka, who, you know, this kind of blows my mind. I was down on Tanaka coming into the year. He went for 20 in CBS, which I thought was ridiculous, but that's what he earned, and he earned that at 154 innings. And you know, I know the concerns with Tanaka are probably always going to be there in the back of people's minds because he didn't get the Tommy John, but he delivered last year.
Yeah, he certainly outlasted my expectations. And you know, I wonder whether people are going to now assume that risk goes away because we're further away from it. But I'm certainly not going to invest like it's gone away.
I'll have him ranked higher than last year, but I won't be treating him like a top 15 or top 10 guy in mix. I'm still a little leery.
Yeah. Yeah. But is there anyone else you want to talk about here?
On the pitching side or just in general?
Either. It could be someone we skipped over on the hitting side.
Well, you know, on the hitting side, I just want to mention, because they were kind of in the second tier, something about offense being down to the degree that it is. You've got two guys that are just outside the top 10 on the hitting side I find interesting. And there's Xander Bogaerts and, you know, the Red Sox for you, George, and Eric Hosmer. They each earn 28. And they did it with seasons that you wouldn't expect from a $28 player. You know, Bogaerts, 7 home runs, 10 steals. Hosmer, 18 home runs, 7 steals. Not really big in the counting stats, but they managed to put up those numbers because they put so much up in runs and runs batted in. And Bogaerts in particular hit 320. And I look at them as players who I think they could sustain the value portfolio. And I could also see them getting a little bit better, you know, in particular in Bogaerts' case, in power. But it's a great example of in only leagues how you really want to go after somebody who's just a baseball player and can offer talent across the board, as opposed to pursuing, say, power and getting a 250 hitter. You know, we talked about Trumbo before, but just somebody who's like a 250 hitter where you kind of look at it and you're like, eh. You know, this guy's okay, but he's not necessarily going to carry me. You know, good example, you know, Kyle Seager on the Mariners, really good player, but with his .266 batting average and with only 6 steals, he only earned 22, even though he had 26 home runs, and, you know, was a solid player in both runs with 85 and runs batted in with 74. But because the steals aren't there, or just a few of them are there, and because the average is only, you know, slightly ahead of the curve of the league average, you're better off with Bogaerts and Hosmer in an only format.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me.
I was gonna say I have one guy who I want to get your guys' opinion on. Either of you can grab it, but Yu Darvish missed all last season. We mentioned Alex Cobb missing the whole year, but what do we sort of know about him as far as coming back in 2016, and where do you see him fitting in? Is he still, you know, premier top of the class American League pitcher? I mean, I'm not sure what to do with him going into this upcoming year.
Yeah, I don't think you can pay. I don't think you can pay a high-end price for him in 2016 just because you don't know when he's going to come back and you don't know what the Rangers' plan is going to be for him. I mean, they have Hamels, so they don't need him to be their ace. They could, you know, they could theoretically be a little bit more conservative with him. I wouldn't want to take that risk. I think you could end up with him doing something along the lines of what Pat Corbin did last year, which is kind of returning in June, like early June, and throwing he'll probably throw more than 120 innings, but maybe throwing 130 innings. I think expecting anything more than that is probably asking too much, and it's probably not worth the value proposition.
Yep. That's fair.
I would just say on Darvish, you know, I agree with Brett. I'm thinking late May is probably the best case scenario. It's funny, in my AL home league, I dumped last year and I have him as a keeper at three, and that'll be nice. But really, if you're in a non-keeper, if you're redrafting, you can't treat him as an elite pitcher. At best case, he's an SP2, and that's the best case.
Yep. I couldn't remember the last time I had a Yu Darvish thought until like 2 minutes ago. So figured it was worth sharing with the group.
Yeah.
Cool.
Makes sense. You should read the entire suite of articles that that Mike's put up at BP. He did a mixed league one after that, which is, you know, obviously worth reading as well. We've talked about the AL and the NL. The mix is a little bit different, but a lot of the same names. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and wrap things up. Thank you for listening to Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I have been Brett Sayer. Mike has been Mike Gianella. And George has been George Bissell. We will be back. I believe we will be back for one more episode before Christmas, maybe?
Yeah, we have to figure
out. I think so.
We have to figure out the schedule because we're off schedule today, but we'll be back for one more.
Yeah, and then come January, we ramp back up again as we get you guys all ready for 2016. So in the meantime, read baseballperspectus.com. Go and subscribe, see all of the top tens, all of the great fantasy content, all of the great national content. It's all the great transaction analysis. We're right in the middle of that with the winter meeting, so it's all there. It's all good, and we will see you in another week or two. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. unplug, if you unplug Christy, it'd probably help, but just because I won't remember it later.
What?
I'm sorry, I'm talking to my wife. She's asking if she wants me to unplug the Christmas tree. Usually Brett's wife is the one we usually hear in the background. I keep saying you gotta get Colleen and Carolyn on one day to do a podcast. Being like fantasy wives. I think it would be very funny actually.
Fantasy wives could go in a lot of directions.
That's true.